Okay, good evening, everyone. We're now beginning Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra, Tavshin Ayin Tes. So what I want to first start off with is a famous discussion about how we are to understand karbanos. We know that karbanos sacrifices, what we refer to as sacrifices, plays a major role in the Torah, in our prayers. And there's lots of discussion exactly as to how to understand what does the carbon do? How does the carbon work? What exactly, or how are we to understand this act of slaughtering the animal and burning the animal and sprinkling its blood, and it brings atonement? How are we to understand? How are we understand that process? We know that when we talk about the word avoda, divine worship, that refers to bringing karbanos. When we don't have karbanos, we don't have sacrifices, it means davening, it means prayer. How are we to understand exactly this service that Hashem has given us of the sacrifices? So I'm working off a sefer called Yisrdei HaTorah. Yisrdei HaTorah was written by Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky, Shlita of Silver Spring, Maryland, which is a sefer in which he compiled on different important fundamental subjects in the parsha. He compiled many different commentaries how they deal with these fundamental topics. And so I'm working off what he cites here, what he has compiled here regarding this question, at least some of the points that he brings. So the starting point tonight for us will be the Mori Nevuchim. Rabbi Maimonides, who wrote Mori Nevuchim, what we call in English the Guide for the Perplexed, where he explains the mitzvahs. So when the Rambam talks about their karbanos, sacrifices in Mori Nevuchim, so he says like this. He says that it is impossible for a person to suddenly change their nature. If you've been used to something for a long time, it's too much to be expected that you're going to change it right away. And therefore, he says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was to tell the Jewish people to come, that they're to become the special nation of Hashem through their recognition of Hashem and to worship Him, the common form of worship in those days was what is basically the same idea as a sacrifice. The typical way of doing any kind of divine worship was that they would take animals and they would bring the animals into these large structures, these special sanctuaries, special places, where they had there, as he says, their idols, their forms, the different things that they worshipped. And it was, they would go ahead and they would bow to them and they would offer and they would make offerings to them. And you had special people designated to take care of that divine worship, take care of that service, what we call priests. Okay. So now, when the point was that the Jewish people now had to take on worshiping Hashem, no more worshiping of idols, but worshiping of Hashem. So to go ahead and to just go ahead and stop it. We're not doing this anymore. No more any of these kinds of forms of worshiping through sacrifices and bowing down and temples. We don't do that anymore. That's done. Well, if that was the way that things would have been done, if Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was now to express to Jewish people the service of Hashem, and he were to basically reject any of the forms of worship that they were used to doing or used to seeing before, it would just be too much for them to accept. He says, the Rambam, imagine, and again, this has different ramifications, just imagine it in the sense of a reaction. A prophet would come to the Jewish people and say, okay, everybody say, no more davening, when you have any problems, no more speaking to Hashem. From now on, all you do is think. All you do is meditate, but we don't daven anymore. That's it. He doesn't want it anymore. No more talking to him. No more giving tzedakah. No more crying out. All you do now is just meditate. So people have a very hard time dealing with this. Therefore, he says the same thing. If Hashem would have told us basically to reject all of the old forms of worship, it would be something that we wouldn't be able to go ahead and to handle. Therefore, says the Rambam, the Ribbono Shel Olam made sure to hold on to those old forms, but basically to tell the Jewish people that those forms have to now be focused and transferred to the worship of Hashem. So now what do we have? We have animal sacrifices. we have a temple, we have a place, we have a structure in which we do this worship. We have a Kohen, we have specific people who go ahead and do, take care of this actual service. And all of this is a way of the Rabbeinu Shlomo making sure that, of course, our goal is to recognize Hashem as the one God, the one creator, to subjugate ourselves to Him and to worship Him. But the way to do that would be the way to come to that, to reach that goal, says the Rambam, was to not abruptly alter everything that the Jewish people were used to until now, but rather take it and now transform it into, give it the Jewish flavor, give it the Torah nature to it, and now turn it into the service of Hashem. So that is how at least how this excerpt from the Maran Avuchim expresses it. It's a form of the fact that it's too hard for the Jewish people to have changed and to go ahead and to completely reject this form of worship, which is true. That form of worship originally was the way they worshipped idols, the way they worshipped pagan gods. That's where that worship that was most common. But at the same time, being most common meant this is what they were used to. And therefore, if this is what they were used to go ahead and change it would have been too abrupt, would have been too radical, and therefore Hashem now just took these forms of worship and said to the Jewish people, now you use that in the service of Hashem, all for the point of getting to the goal, of course, of recognizing the one creator of the world. Now, the Maran Avuchim then goes into trying to, so to speak, preempt people's questions. And he says, you know, you may ask, according to what we're saying that you've got this whole body of laws of Karbanis, all for the purpose, and the only reason we really still have them is because of the fact that we just couldn't deal otherwise. We wouldn't be able to worship God otherwise. We have to have a form of worshiping God. We have to have a form of subjugating ourselves to the service of God. And because we can't get used to, we wouldn't be able to get used to not doing what we're used to doing until now. So therefore, this is how we have all these bodies of laws. So the Maran Avuchim says, well, then you may ask a question that, you know, if the problem is that we just can't go in and change our habits, then the Rabbeinu Shlomo should, instead of going to the secondary thing of saying, well, you know, I know that you can't handle otherwise, so just take this same thing and use it in my service. Why should we say that Hashem basically is just giving up and saying that, you know, I can't change you, so I'm going to let you keep doing these things. Command us, give us the right way, and give us the strength to do it the right way. Tell us to do it the right way, and give us the ability to do it the right way. That can't happen. Interesting way of how the Maran Avuchim points it out. Why go basically for second best? Go for the first. Go for where you're supposed to be. And give us the power, the ability to do it. So it says the Maran Avuchim that we find in different places in the Chumash, we find in different places that it just doesn't work that way. And the example that he gives is a very interesting one. Let's turn back to Parshas Beshalach. This is on page 366, the beginning of Parshas Beshalach, just right after the Jewish people have left Mitzrayim. So, Vayhi Beshalach Paro Yasa'am, and it was when Paro sent out the nation, V'leinochem Elohim Derech Eretz Plishtim, Hashem did not lead them in the way of the land of Plishtim, Kikaravhu, which would have been closer. Ki Amar Elohim, for Hashem said, Pen Yinochem Ma'am, lest the nation regret, B'raisa Melchaber, when they see war, V'shavim Mitzrayim, they'll return to Egypt. So why did Hashem, there would have been a straight path coming out of Egypt, going to Eretz Yisrael, straight path would have been the land of Plishtim. The problem is, if they go through Plishtim, they're going to encounter war, and they're going to turn around and leave, and go back. Therefore, Hashem made them go completely a whole different way in order to prevent that from happening. So he says, based on your question, you should ask the following question. The Rabbeinu Shlomo, clearly the way to go is through the land of Plishtim. But no, because the Jewish people won't be able to handle it. Since they're able to handle it, they got to go a whole different route. Give them the strength tell them, go that way, give them the strength to deal with the war, and everything will be fine. Why do you have to settle for second best? Why can't you just go the straight path and give him the ability to handle it? The answer is that Hashem doesn't go ahead, and by, again, the way you understand the point that the Rambam says at the end is that basically Hashem does not change our nature. Hashem does not take away, typically Hashem is not going to take away who we are and what we are and the choices that we make. That's what we call Bechira. Hashem does not interfere, or typically, maybe there are times that he does interfere, but as a general rule, Hashem is not going to interfere with the nature of man and change it so that he will do what Hashem wants him to. The whole question here is, you're settling for second best because Hashem says I'm settling, so to speak, Hashem says I'm settling for second best because I can't do first choice because I can't handle it. Give them ability to handle it. Well, you see over here, didn't give them the ability to go ahead and travel through the land of Plishtim because Hashem does not change the nature of people. He made us in a certain way, and it's within that nature that we make our choices, that we lead our lives. And therefore, the same way here we find that Rabbeinu Shlomo didn't change who the Jewish people were, but basically worked with who they were in the way that he led them towards Eretz Yisrael. The same thing he says applies to everything else. Same thing applies to anything of the Torah. If Hashem always, if the solution to every time that we meet a challenge is that Hashem should just give us the strength to handle it, then there's no more choice, basically. And all the, another example he gives. He gives that in the Torah, we know the Torah very often tells us, if you serve Hashem, you'll get rewarded. If you don't serve Hashem, you'll be punished. Why are you doing that? Just give us the strength and ability to do what we're supposed to do, and everything will be cool, right? The answer is that's not the way it is. It's very clear that the Torah doesn't work that way. It's very clear the Torah doesn't work with Hashem just changing us towards the way he wants us to be. Or that any time there's an issue about being challenged with what he wants from us, so he'll give us the strength to deal with it. If that's what happens, then everything that we have in the Torah, all the warnings of the prophets and the motivations and the warnings, what's it all about? Why do we have all these things? Why did the prophets and why did Moshe Rabbeinu, why did the Torah always tell us these things about serving Hashem and not serving Hashem? What do we need that for? Hashem wants us to serve him. He'll give us the strength and the ability to serve him. The answer is, but it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And our understanding of that is that Hashem gave us free will, our choice, and we make the choices. When we make the choices, that's what makes us worthy for reward. That's the way he wanted us to become worthy of becoming close with him, by earning it, by working towards it. And therefore, to go ahead and say, well, if the whole reason we're doing something is because we have to settle for second best because the people can't handle it, so you want to say, well, go for first best and give them the ability to hand it to be able to deal with the first choice. Give us the ability to deal with that first choice. That is not how Hashem works. Hashem doesn't change our nature. Throughout the Torah, we find that we are created in a certain way. Hashem works with that way that we are created, and he does not change that nature in order for us to meet his requirements, to meet what he wants from us. Okay. Now, he then says, the Rambam, interestingly, that because of the fact that the way he's explaining Karbanos, it is, so to speak, second best, therefore, he says, we find, we see throughout the Torah that our ability to bring sacrifices is limited. We have many mitzvahs in the Torah that we have constantly have a chance to fulfill them. There are very little restrictions, there are very little conditions made of how we are to fulfill them. We have the opportunity, and we have many opportunities to fulfill them. Sacrifices is much limited. And that is, for instance, we can't just go ahead and offer any time and anywhere. I mean, there was a time called a bumma, which is a private sacrifice, which could be done anywhere. But essentially, that's not what Hashem wants. Hashem wants us to build a heichal. He wants us to build a Beis HaMikdash and only do our sacrifices there. He doesn't want everyone to be a Kohen, to be the one that can actually do the sacrifices. He limits who could actually do it. He says all these things are to go ahead, or the reason why there are limits on this form of worshiping Hashem is because this is not really the way, that this is not really the best way to go. The best way to go is prayer, supplication, all the other mitzvahs that we have, all of these other mitzvahs that we have that we can do them anytime and any place is all because of the fact that, right, all because of the fact that, in essence, the way that we should be doing our worship of Hashem is with tefillahs, with prayer. And because that's the way it should be done, therefore the opportunity for it isn't limited. The reason why we're going through the whole sacrifices is because of the fact that we wouldn't be able to reject them. We wouldn't be able to handle just giving that all up. Well, if basically that is what the Rambam calls one kavana rishayna, the first intent, the primary intent, then there's the kavana shniya, the second intent, which is a way of saying that this is not the choice way of doing things, not the best way of doing things, but this is the way it needs to be done. Well, because it is what needs to be done, it's not the highest choice of how to do things, therefore it's much more limited than the other things that we also do to serve Hashem and to worship Hashem and to subjugate to Hashem's, where davening and mitzvahs, much less limits than you have, like you have for bringing sacrifices. Okay? So that's this approach of the Rambam. The approach of the Rambam is, at least in this section of the Mara Nebuchim, is the fact that sacrifice, the reason why we have sacrifices is not because that's really the primary form of how to worship God. The primary form to worship God would be through davening, through prayers, through other mitzvahs that we do. These are the things that are the best ways of how we are to gain our recognition and belief and subjugation to Hashem. Those are the ways it should be done. The sacrifices that we do to in which we also serve Hashem, says the Rambam, is really because of this is the way that people were always used to serving Hashem. They wouldn't be able to reject it and to change it, and therefore this became a form of worship of Hashem also. But we see that it's much more limited because of the fact that it is not the choice way, the best way of how we should be connecting and serving Hashem. Okay, that's the Rambam. And again, this Rambam is a very interesting approach. It clearly makes bringing sacrifices not exactly the way that we typically take it. There's so much that we have in our sages that talk about bringing sacrifices, and we'll have to see how the Rambam. We're going to now go into the questions on the Rambam and see how we deal with it. Okay, so the Ramban Nachmanides, yeah.
But there was a transition from this animal sacrifices into substituting it with the prayer.
Eventually, that's true. I mean, according to the Rambam, we know the Gemara says that after Mishmash was destroyed, we turned to prayer. But let's see some of the questions that the Ramban asks on the Rambam and see what the answer to these questions are, and see if we gain a different insight into the Rambam. So the Ramban cites the Rambam. I mean, again, I'm working with the Sefer that's bringing the excerpts. The way the Ramban brings down the Rambam in his explanation to the sacrifices is a little, to me, it seems a little bit different than the way the Mara Nebuchim that's being quoted here. So it's a little bit different. But I think the main questions are actually going to be the same. And that is that if you approach Karbanos as your second choice, then we know, if we go back to our parsha, back to Parshas Vayikra, So if we take a look on, let's say, page 546, we look at Pasuk Tes. So after the Torah's first description of the Ola carbon, the burnt offering, the Ola, it ends, Ola Isherech Nechayach LaHashem, a elevation offering, a fire offering, a satisfying aroma to Hashem. So after describing the carbon, it's called Reach Nechayach LaHashem. It's called a satisfying aroma to Hashem. So says the Ramban, according to the Rambam, it comes out that this thing that the Torah describes as a satisfying aroma to Hashem is really second best. It's really not what we want. It's really, essentially, we could do without this. But since we can't do without it, we have to have it. And that's called Reach Nechayach LaHashem. That's called a satisfying aroma to Hashem. It doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound that something that we're doing only because we have to do it this way, because we can't do it any other way, would be called a Reach Nechayach, a satisfying aroma to Hashem. He also says that I'm not going to get that right now. And then he asks a couple of questions. So he asks a question that, according to the Rambam, if really the service of sacrifices was a pagan worship, and because that's what the Jewish people were used to, that's why we still have it. So that would have to mean that before pagan worship, or what we call Avodah Zarah, developed, there should have been no such thing as a carbon. That's what should follow. And the problem is that in the Torah we see clearly not that way. Because the first person to bring a carbon to the Torah is Hevel, right? Cain and Hevel. Each one brought a gift. Hevel brought a sacrifice. He brought an animal. He brought a sacrifice. There's no idol worship then. There were no other gods. No one else was worshiping other gods then. That to say the sacrifice was that. Noach comes out of the ark. He brings sacrifices. Again, that wasn't... Now again, at that point of time, sure, there was idol worship. Are you going to say, when Noach comes out of the Teva and he brings the sacrifices, and because of that Hashem decides no more flooding of the world, that's also for the same idea? That Noach had to do that in order because Noach had seen idol worship? I mean, we're not saying Noach was an idol worshiper. He wasn't an idol worshiper. But because of the fact that he saw idol worship, so now he has to bring a sacrifice because otherwise he couldn't handle it? That seems very odd. Okay. Again, the way the Rambam, it just seems very odd that to say that about Noach. I have to be honest, I'm not exactly saying that the Ramban asked the question because he says it but on the contrary. Just one second. All right. I'm just going to say that the question, whether it's exactly Ramban's question or not, but I think it is still a question based on how the Ramban is asking, is that it's also very difficult to go ahead and say that Noach brings the sacrifices, and because of that, Hashem is pleased with his sacrifices. Hashem says, because of that, I'm not going to destroy the world again. And you're going to say that's only because Noach couldn't do it otherwise. Noach couldn't serve Hashem otherwise. And that's what now, and that's the only way you can worship Hashem, and therefore is in this manner that now Hashem said, no more floods. And besides, Noach himself wasn't an idol worshiper. To say that, Noach wouldn't have been able to otherwise have brought us, he wouldn't be able to have dealt with serving Hashem otherwise. Pretty simply put, Noach brings a sacrifice to Hashem. Hashem is pleased with the sacrifices, so pleased that Hashem says there's not going to go ahead and be any more floods. Now we understand that one of the sins of the generation of the flood was idol worship. No one's saying that wasn't there. But to go in and say that that's why Noach brought a sacrifice, because he couldn't do otherwise something else, and that thing that couldn't have been otherwise, that's what brings about Hashem's change of mind, that brings about that Hashem isn't going to go in and destroy the world anymore. It seems really difficult to understand it that way. So that's the Ramban's questions on the Rambam. Basically, if sacrifices are your second choice, that again, and the only second choice, because the Jewish people, again, who were idol worshippers in Mitzrayim, wouldn't be able to be used to going ahead and dealing with sacrifice, dealing with worship, some kind of divine worship otherwise. So, you know, you find that Hevel brought a sacrifice. There was no idol worship at that point of time. Noach went ahead and brought, Noach's Karbonis went ahead and accomplished that Hashem shouldn't curse the world anymore. So again, you're going to say that Noach had to do it. Noach was not an idol worshiper. He didn't have that problem. And to say that if for some reason he did have the problem and he's also doing second best, that is, pleases Hashem so much that he's not going to bring the flood anymore. It doesn't work. So the Abar Benel, when he explains the Rambam, the following way. His point really is to say that the Rambam himself implies that there is, you know, first choice and second choice. The Rambam himself implies that Hashem would rather us that the way that we, so to speak, should have been serving Hashem is not with sacrifices. It's being able to serve Hashem, to recognize His oneness, to recognize that He is the creator of the world, segregate ourselves. There's ways of doing that that would maybe be better than bringing sacrifices. But as the Rambam says, we got so used to bringing sacrifices, it would be too hard to give it up. But it's clear, you've got the first choice, and you've got the second choice. So therefore, the way the Abar Benel wants to go ahead and explain is that So the way that Abar Benel explains the Rambam is the following way. First of all, let's back up a second. The Ramban at the end, when the Ramban explains mitzvahs, when he explains the karbanis, the Ramban comes out saying, at least in one of his approaches, is that we're not going to really understand how a karban works, but the way that it does work is that there's some kind of, when you bring a sacrifice, when a kohen brings a sacrifice, there is a certain energy that is, so to speak, that gets a spiritual energy that's released from the carbon that now does big things in heaven. The sacrifices themselves are able to bring about great accomplishments in the heavenly worlds, which is what we need for our spiritual existence. So the bringing of the sacrifice, how it works, what's the way that it works, he doesn't get into it. But he says that the way, what sacrifices does is, sacrifices based, if you want to say based on Kabbalah, sacrifices are able to go ahead and, so to speak, they release an energy that accomplishes many important things in the heavenly worlds for our benefit. That's what it does. How exactly does it work? Doesn't really explain, but that's what it does. So the Abar Benel says in the Rambam that the Rambam agrees with that. The Rambam does not disagree with that. The Rambam agrees karbanis do that. And that's why Hevel brought a karban. That's why Noach brought a karban. Karbanis definitely do that. However, when we're dealing with the Torah being given to the Jewish people, where the fulfillment of the Torah is meant to bring the Jewish people to recognizing Hashem, and to being close with Hashem and recognizing Hashem, and in that recognition, accept Him as the one God, as the Creator, and that He runs our lives and to subjugate ourselves to Him, which is supposed to be done through the worship that we do to Him. It says the Rambam was very clear to the Rambam that davening and different mitzvahs accomplish that more than taking an animal, slaughtering it, cutting it up, burning it on a fire and sprinkling its blood. That's part of the problem that's part of the difficulty of karbanis. You know, we read about Kapanes, but it's so strange. What exactly is this thing? You slaughter it and you burn it, and that's what makes Hashem satisfied. How does this all work? How does it all work? It's clearly something that's very difficult for us to be able to relate to. And therefore, so the Rambam said like this. The Rambam looks at Karbanas and he says, you know, there's clearly Karbanas are not, if you want to, clearly the Karbanas have great powers. No question about it. But for what the Torah is meant to do, which is to bring us closer to recognize Hashem, sacrifices don't really fit that bill. Sacrifices don't really do that. So if so, in the structure of Torah, which is to help us recognize Hashem, sacrifices don't really fit in there. And therefore it's kind of difficult to understand why is it that Hashem gave us this form of service. Where there are so many other things, davening, and so many other mitzvahs, that they really contribute much stronger to our recognizing of Hashem than a sacrifice, why then do we have sacrifices? The answer is because they were so used to sacrifices that Hashem wasn't going to just say, forget it. The Jewish people, because of the fact that they had worshipped idols, and they were exposed to that, because of that, for them to go ahead and to reject that form of worship that they were used to, that would be too much for them. They just weren't able to handle it. And therefore Hashem incorporated sacrifices also into serving Him. But as the Rambam says, but they're limited because there's only so much they can really do for the person himself. There's only so much they can do for the person himself to come to recognize Hashem. And therefore, they're limited. And yes, they are the kavanah shniya. They are the second intention. They're not the optimal. They're not first choice, so to speak. Because now again, not to say that they don't accomplish great things. They could accomplish great things, and I would venture to say, and once we have the karbanis, and we do them, yeah, they can still do all those great things that we know karbanis do. But looking at karbanis from the point of what a mitzvah is to do, and that is help us recognize Hashem, karban doesn't do that. So therefore, from that point, it would seem that karbanis, we shouldn't be doing karbanis. The answer is, we have to do karbanis. We have to do karbanis. Because of the fact that we couldn't handle abandoning it. At the same time, the power of the karban to go ahead and accomplish these great things, which I guess to say is it's a fringe benefit that we get from it. And therefore, it's a fringe benefit that we get whatever karbanos are able to do in Shemayim. But if you want to understand essentially from the point of mitzvah, from the point of what a mitzvah is supposed to do, which is help us gain recognition from Hashem, karbanos don't seem to fit into that. The answer is, from that point, the Rabbanu Shalom still kept their karbanos because of the fact that we wouldn't be able to reject it. Now, theoretically, if we would have been able to have, you know, gone without karbanos, how would the other aspect of karbanos, which is to accomplish great things, which is why Hevel brought a karban, Enoch brought a karban, how would that have been accomplished? I don't know. There would have been, you know, it could very well be that Hashem has other ways that they could get accomplished. But once, at the end of the day, so as the Rambam is saying, we couldn't abandon it, and we need to do it. It's not like bringing a carbon can't accomplish great things, as we see that it did as Hevel brought a carbon, as what it did for Noach brought a carbon. And again, from the fact that the Torah calls it a pleasant aroma to Hashem. So this is a way I understand of how the Abarbanel answers the Rambam. The Rambam does not reject what the Ramban says, that sacrifices have the ability to accomplish many great things, as we see from Noach. But from the point of what mitzvahs are about, which is to help us understand and recognize Hashem, karbanos just don't seem to do that well. And therefore, says the Rambam, the reason why karbanos are part of the mitzvahs and part of our life of Torah is because of the fact that it was too hard for the Jewish people to abandon that, and therefore it was kept as it was incorporated. It was incorporated onto the Torah, and again, all for the service of Hashem. Okay, that's the first thing. Now, the next thing I'd like to share with you is the following. So let's read some psukim. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Vayikra el Moshe, this is page 544. Vayikra el Moshe, and he called to Moshe. Vayidaber Hashem eilav, and Hashem said to him, spoke to him, Me'omeid leimar, from the Omeid, from the tent of meeting, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, v'yamartu aleihem, and say to them, Adam a person, ki yakrav mikem karban Hashem, who will offer a sacrifice from amongst you to God. Men abehema, men abakar, men atzain, from animals, from cattle, from sheep, takrivas karbanchem, you shall offer your sacrifice. Im ola karbanoi min abakar, if his carbon will be an ola, which the art scroll translates an elevation offering, or we call it a burnt offering, min abakar, from the cattle, zachar tamim yakrivenu, it should be male, it should be without blemish, el pesach ayol moye yakriv oisei, the person should bring the animal to the opening of the mishkan, l'rtzeinoi, voluntarily, lifnei Hashem, before God. V'samach yaday al reisha eila, the first thing he does is, he leans his hand on the head of the burnt offering, this animal that will be the burnt offering. V'nirtzeinoi, l'chaper alav, and it shall become acceptable for him, to atone for him. Now, this is the pasuk that we're going to focus on. V'shachat es ben abakar lifnei Hashem, he shall slaughter the bull in front of Hashem. The Kerivu b'nei Aaron akayanim es Adam. The b'nei Aaron will then bring will now take the blood and bring it close. The Zarku es Adam lo esbeach saviv, and they shall sprinkle the blood onto the altar all around. Asher Pesach ayol mei, that's at the opening of the Mishkan. Okay, so we talk about the person who wants to bring a carbon. His carbon's got to be, if it's going to be an oila, it's got to be male, it's got to be unblemished. He brings it to the Mishkan, he leans his hand on it, and then it says, Pasakeh, and he shall slaughter the cow in front of God, and the sons of Aaron will bring the blood and sprinkle it on the altar. So we know the Pasuk says, who brought the blood to the altar? Who sprinkled the blood on the altar? The Kohanim. Who shechted it? Who slaughtered the animal when it said, Veshachar, he shall slaughter it? Who's slaughtering it? No mention of the Kayin here. It just says he will slaughter it. Sounds like the person bringing the animal could slaughter it. So it says Rashi, that's exactly what we learned from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'shachat v'krivu ha'kohanim, and he will slaughter it, and the Kohanim will bring forth. Mikabala fa'elach, that means from the catching of the blood and onwards, mitzvah kohuna, that is the job of the Kohanim. But this teaches us that the slaughtering of a sacrifice can be done even by a non-Kohen. So what we have here, what we have at the beginning of the processing of a carbon, we have the slaughtering, you got to catch the blood, you've got to bring the blood to the altar, it's got to be sprinkled. So what we learn from the pasuk that says, v'shachat v'ikrivu, it says v'ikrivu kohanim, it only says, and the kohanim will bring forth, that from there we see the shechita, the slaughtering of the sacrifice, doesn't have to be done by a kohen. A non-kohen can do it. And that's the halacha. A non-kohen can do it. So now I want to go through with you a famous story from the Gemara in Brachas that relates to this pasuk. And the Gemara in Brachas is talking about Shmuel HaNavi. Now when you learn the Sefer Shmuel Aleph, it's a story of a man named Elkanah. He has two wives, Chan and Penina. Chan is childless, Penina has children. Penina seems to taunt Chan about the fact she doesn't have children. So now when Elkanah brings his family on Yontif to the Mishkan to bring sacrifices, eat from the sacrifices on Yontif, so basically, Penina gets a portion of all her children. Chan doesn't have any portion with children, just gets her own special portion, but she has no children. And eventually, and it says that Chana would cry, and Elkanah says to Chana, why are you crying? Am I not better to you than seven sons? Which, at that point, after Elkanah says that, Chana gets the picture, or gets the feeling that he's given up. and she goes on her own to daven. And this is the famous chapter, this the famous story at the end of the first chapter of the book of Shmuel, where Hannah goes into by the Mishkan. She's davening quietly. She's doing something brand new. No one ever did it before her. She walks over and she quietly davens to Hashem. No one hears her words. It's silent. And she's standing there and talking to Hashem silently. The Kohen Gadol present then is Eli. Eli sees what she's doing. He's never seen such a thing. And he basically thinks she's drunk. And he says to her, you shouldn't be doing this drunk. Chana says, I'm not drunk. I'm just very bitter. I'm dying that Hashem should give me a child. And Eli gives her a blessing, that he recognizes she's not drunk, that she was sincere in her davening, and he promises her that she'll have a child. She goes back. She's not crying anymore. She has a child. And when she was davening to Hashem for the child, who eventually became Shmuel, Navi Samuel the prophet, she promised that at a certain point of time she would bring her beloved son and give her beloved son over to live in the Mishkan to serve Hashem. Well, she did it. Came time, he was old enough, he was still a child, and she went ahead and she brought over the child to Eli. Now, the Pesukim there say, Vayishchatu es hapar, they slaughtered the cow, Vayoviu anar el Eli, and they brought the child to Eli. And she says to Eli, Al hanar hazes palalti, this is the young boy that I davened for. So the Gemara is bothered by the way the Pesukim are set up. It says, they slaughtered the cow and they brought the young boy to Eli, referring to Shmuel. What's the connection? What is slaughtering the cow and then bringing the child to Eli got to do with each other? That the Pesukim put them in order. The child came after they slaughtered the cow. What's the connection? Why does Shmuel's coming to Eli have to be connected to slaughtering the cow? And therefore, the Gemara says, gives us some background. Okay. What happened was like this. It was time to bring a sacrifice in the Mishkan. And Eli the Kohen Gadol tells to everyone, Kiru Kohen Leisi Velishchait. Call a Kohen to come and slaughter the animal for the sacrifice. Chazinu Shmuel Dave Mahadri Batsar Kohen Levishchat. Shmuel noticed that they were looking for a Kohen to perform the slaughtering of the animal. Omar Lahu, so again, this young boy, Shmuel, says to the other Kohanim, Lamalahu La Duri Basar Kayan, Lemishlemishchet. Why are you looking for a Kayan to slaughter the animal? Shchita Mizar Kshera. Slaughtering a sacrifice can even be done by a non Kohen. Aisula Kame de Eli. So then they went and they brought him to Eli. This is why this is the connection between slaughtering the animal and bringing Shmuel to Eli. Omar Lehmi Nolacha. Eli says to Shmuel, how do you know this? Does the pasuk say the Kohen will slaughter? It says the Kohanim will bring it forth, which means from catching the blood and onwards, that has to be done by the Kohanim. But from here we can see that the slaughter can be done even by a non-Kohen, as we said from Rashi. Omar lei meimir shaper ka'amrit. So Eli said to Shmuel, very good. You're saying very good. Miu, however, meir alach b'fnei rabachata. You rendered a lucky decision in front of your master. Eli was the master. He was the one in charge. He was the master. He was the Rebbe. He was the rabbi over there. And Shmuel had rendered a halachic decision in front of Eli. Instead of Eli making the halachic decision, or he went ahead and he didn't ask Eli. He went ahead and he told everyone, you don't need a kayin. He went and he rendered a halachic decision in front of his Rebbe, in front of who's supposed to be his master. And if you render a halachic decision in front of your master, in front of your teacher, that is a very serious sin. It could even bring to death. So when Hannah heard this, she came and cried to Eli. I'm the woman who was standing with you. Remember that? So Eli says, let me punish him, because that's what he deserves, and I'll daven to Hashem that you'll have a son even greater than him. And that Chana said, Al hanar azayis palalti, I daven for this child. Spare him. And he did. Okay? So it's an interesting story here with Eli, of how it was, how with Shmuel and Eli, that Shmuel went ahead, this halacha that we just learned here in this pasuk, and we see how it's derived from the pasuk, that a non-Kohen can slaughter an animal. This is the Gemara in Brachas that Shmuel said to Eli. Now Eli said to Shmuel, you know, for doing this, you read an halacha decision in front of your rabbi, you deserve to be punished for that. So there's a sefer called Tzion LeNefesh Chaya, commentary on Brachas, that asks a kasha that actually there is a halacha that if the student can prove that he's right, if the student can actually prove that he's right, that then the halacha is he's not. It's not wrong for him to do that. The Talmud yochel achlek al rabbi, a student's allowed to argue with his rebbe im yesh l'ra, if he has a proof. That means basically acting out of step with your rebbe isn't a problem if you have a proof. So therefore, the Tzion Nefesh Chaya asks, Shmuel had a proof. He brought him the pasuk. He proved it from the pasuk. And Eli said, "You're right." Well, that means that Shmuel had a right to say his opinion then. So why would he be liable for punishment? If he has, if it would seem from this opinion, I mean, I didn't research this 100%. But basically, the point here is that it would seem that if the student just kind of without a proof just gives his opinion in front of his rebbe, that's wrong to do. Even to go give his opinion in front of his rebbe without any kind of proof, that would be wrong. But with a proof, it seems that at least according to some opinions, that's okay to do. So that's exactly what Shmuel did. He proved his opinion. He proved his point. If he proved his point, then he shouldn't be punished for giving his opinion in front of his rebbe. He had a proof. He could even argue. The other question is, what exactly happened here, this whole story? I mean, Eli didn't know that you don't need a kohen to shecht. It's not like the first time they ever brought a sacrifice here. Sacrifice had been brought already for a while. They didn't know this halacha, that a non-kohen can do the shechita? When did it get forgotten that all of a sudden now Shmuel has to go ahead and bring it back and prove it from the pasuk? Eli didn't know it? What even happened here? So the Tzion Nefesh Chaya, known as Etzlach, says like this. He says is that it's true that halachically a non-Kohen would have been able to have done the shechita to slaughter the animal. But the practice, the common practice for the Kohanim was not to allow a non-Kohen to do it, but it should be done by a Kohen. He gives an example. We know that on Yom Kippur, there is a Sir Lazazel, the goat that's taken out and thrown over the cliff. That was done by a Kohen. The halacha is, it doesn't need to be done by a kohen. It could even be done by a non-kohen. But it's very clear from the Gemara that he always made sure a kohen did it. When the Mishnah talks about how the daily sacrifices were done by lots, the kohen would draw lots. It's very clear that one of the mitzvahs, or one of the parts of the karbanis, daily karbanis that they drew lots for to do, was the shechita, was the slaughtering. So it's very clear that although the slaughter could be done by a non-kayin, the kayhanim kept it for the kayhanim. The better way of doing it would be with a kayin. The same way the kayin does everything else for the carbon, he does the shechita too. Is it kosher without the kayin? Yes, but the practice was to keep it by the kayhanim, which was a way of doing the mitzvah on a higher level. Okay, so therefore, when the time came to do the mitzvah, to bring the sacrifice to slaughter this animal, Eli said, look for a kohen, because that was the common practice. But says the Tzion LeNefesh Chaya that we can make a distinction, and that is, we said that when it came to go ahead and sending the animal over the cliff on Yom Kippur, it's clear they kept it by the kohanim. The slaughtering of the sacrifice is clear they kept it by the kohanim. But what's also clear is that in all these circumstances, you typically did not have any kind of delay to look for a kohen. If you're talking about the lottery to do who does the morning sacrifice, okay, everybody was there. The Kohanim were there. They drew lots. Whoever got the, whoever won, went in and did it. So the Kohen was there, ready, raring to go. When it came to who would go ahead and take the animal to be pushed over the cliff, that too, they already had a person designated from the day before. So in this case, to go ahead and say we only want to use a Kohen was never going to be a cause for any kind of delay in doing the mitzvah. But here, what happened was, you know, Eli said, go look for a Kohen. Which seems that there wasn't necessarily a Kohen there to do it. It's not like you can grab any Kohen to do Shechita. Not every Kohen can do Shechita properly. You have to make sure you got the right person doing it. So therefore, Eli went in and said, you know, go look for a Kohen. And it's very possible that Eli understood that, you know, we don't go ahead and look for a Kohen in a way that, like, delays things who knows how long, because it's not appropriate to delay the performance of a mitzvah. But Eli figured that, you know, we'll be able to find a Kohen, just like a non-Kohen would be able to do it. Shmuel, on the other hand, he's looking around, and he sees that they're looking for a Kohen. They're not finding the Kohen that quickly. And therefore, Shmuel says, what are you delaying for? You could do the Shechita without a Kohen. Shmuel is not bringing out this novel halachic idea that you can do Shechita without a Kohen. Everybody can do Shechita without a Kohen. And from the way that Tzila Nefesh Chaya says it, everybody agrees that you shouldn't be delaying the performance of a sacrifice to go ahead and get a Kohen. But Shmuel, as it says, Shmuel said, the wording of the Gemara that Tzila Nefesh Chaya points out, Shmuel says, why are you bothering to look for a Kohen? That was the problem. You're going through the effort to follow a Kohen. You're delaying things to go ahead and get a Kohen. Why are you doing that? That's supposed to delay a carbon. Even if you try to have the shechita of a carbon with a Kohen, you don't delay it in order to get a Kohen. Now, my understanding is, and as the Tzin Levesh Chaya says, Eli understood that, but it would seem that here Eli felt, right, that it's, you know, we should still look for the Kohen. The delay won't be such a big delay. It takes a little bit to look, but it won't be such a big delay. And that's the way we should go. And Shmuel said, no, this is too long a delay. This is not appropriate. It's not too long a delay. Go in and use a non-Kayin. That's where he paskened against Eli. There was no question of a proof here. This was Shmuel saying, this is too much of a delay. Eli felt it wasn't too much of a delay. And Shmuel saying, it is too much of a delay. That means he's paskening, he's rendering a lach decision in front of his rebbe, in front of his master, in front of his rabbi. Now, the question that's still left is, but Eli says to Shmuel, how do you know? And Shmuel tells him from these psukim. Why is Eli asking him the source? Eli knows the source. Eli knows the halach, he knows the source. Why is he asking Shmuel for the source? So here, the Tzlach says something really interesting. He says, what Eli really wanted from Shmuel to see was, how wise is he? Like, what is his level of maturity here? If his level of maturity is that he could actually give a source, a proof for what he did, that means he's mature enough to have not rendered the halachic decision in front of me. And the Tzion Nefesh Chaya points out that even though it's pretty clear, and even though that we know that Shmuel is a katan, he's a minor. Kilefi reiv chachmas roi la nishai ap she katan eno bar einshin ze shachakem tuva bar einshin ulefi chachmas. Again, the point, Shmuel's he's a katan. He's not even bar mitzvah, far from bar mitzvah. Okay. So typically, you shouldn't get punished for it. There's no punishment for it. A punishment typically doesn't come. Again, a Bezdin punishment, a punishment by Bezdin comes after Bar Mitzvah, and heavenly punishment comes after year 20. And Shmuel wasn't near any of those ages. And Eli still wanted to punish him for writing a halachic decision. So the Tzlach, again, seems to say something interesting, that even though he's not even Bar Mitzvah, but if he is smart enough and mature enough to know not to do this, then he deserves the punishment for it. And therefore, Eli turns to Shmuel and says, how do you know? Shmuel, that brings him a proof. He's smart enough and mature enough to bring a proof to what he's saying. That means he's smart enough not to have realized that he shouldn't have done what he did. And even though he's not even bar mitzvah yet, he is still worthy of punishment. So, but the point of the Tzina Nefesh Chaya is to say that it's not that Shmuel brought about this novel halachic decision that a non-Kohen can shecht. Eli knew that. That's a basic halacha. And it's derived from the from our parsha, as Shmuel said. Eli knew that. But the point is that true shechita, the sorting of a sacrifice, is permitted even by a non-Kohen. There were other things, other services could be done by a non-Kohen, but the Kohanim didn't let non-Kohanim do it. The better way of doing the mitzvah was to do it with Kohanim, and therefore all these things were done with Kohanim. And therefore, when they needed a shechita animal, Eli looked for a Kohen. The problem is that, again, everybody also agrees that you shouldn't go doing it with a Kohen if it causes too much of a delay. If you want to only use a Kayin, if it's going to cause too much of a delay to find a Kayin, then you never should use a Yisrael. Eli held in this situation, the delay won't be that big if we go looking for a Kayin. And Shmuel said, no, it is too much of a delay. That is how he ran the Lach decision in front of his Rebbe, in front of his master. And although he was a Katan, he still could have been worthy of punishment if he is wise and mature enough to have realized not to do this. And the way that Eli tested it was by asking, what's the proof of what you're saying? You're saying a halacha. What's the proof? He said halacha. What are you waiting for? Because a shechita can be kosher even in a non-kayin. How do you know that halacha? And once he proves the halacha, and that shows he's smart enough, Eli says that if he's smart enough to do that, then he should have been smart enough not to have rendered a halachic decision, not that halacha, but a different halachic decision rendered in front of me. They wanted to punish him until Chana prayed, but begged him not to.
Thank you.